Free FM.
Here you can be free.
Penn Jillette.
That's Neil Maxon playing trombone there with the big Mike Jones supersized orchestra. Playing the Penn Jillette theme. We got a lot of different music in here now. It's the Penn Jillette theme because this is Penn Jillette in Las Vegas here on a Good Friday. And I don't know if you know it or not, but Lincoln was shot on a Good Friday. You probably knew Lincoln was shot.
Yeah, I knew that part.
But he was shot on Good Friday, the date that he was assassinated, April 14th. Also fell on a Good Friday in
18...
when Lincoln was shot. And he was compared at the time very heavily, which was considered very blasphemous by most of the evangelical Christians of the country at that time. But they still compared Lincoln to Christ quite a bit when he was shot. There's an interesting article in the New York Times about that. I knew Lincoln was shot, but beyond that, I didn't know much. You know, John Wilkes Booth. That's about all I knew. But you also I don't know if you know this, but right after the Lincoln assassination, a lot of people talked about it being a conspiracy and that it wasn't John Wilkes Booth. He was just a patsy and all that stuff, all that kind of and Oliver Stone stuff just kind of faded away. Does anybody call Oliver Stone Ollie? I wonder. It'd be cool if they called him Ollie. But I worked with Oliver Stone on a movie. I worked on Wall Street, and he cut me out of it. I thought at the time that it was probably because of length. Because the number of pages and so on, it was going to be like a 4.5-hour movie, and my part was not important to the plot. So I thought at the time that that he cut me out because of time. But now, as I've gotten older and more self-aware, I think he cut me out because I sucked. I think that's a
Think it was a plot?
Yeah, Oliver Stone
was sure that's what you were going to say. No, I thought you were going to say the crew got together. And some Cubans called.
Some Cubans had this CIA. That would have been better for the joke, but I was in a moment of self-analysis. I'm talking about
Michael Qdoba. You're going
for the real reason. I think I did not. I mean, when you want to talk about not getting along, two people not getting along, Oliver Stone and Penn Jillette did not get along.
Worse than Don Johnson?
No, not worse than Don Johnson. There were no physical threats with Oliver Stone.
Did you just say Don Johnson threatened you? Or that you threatened Don Johnson?
No. He threatened me.
Okay.
He really, really didn't like me. I mean, it was the cut. And he is very good looking. So to hate him took a little bit more fortitude than for him to hate me. But boy, I did not like Don Johnson. The two things I would not, if I were living my life over, two things I wouldn't do again, high school and Miami Vice. And for the same reason, that the good-looking kids were mean. But it was horrible. It was horrible. And we had Starsky directing it. I get shot in the head. Now, the first three movies I think that I did, I was shot in the head. There was a time in New York City, late 80s, way back then, when if you were making a movie where someone gets shot in the head, I was the
go-to
guy. I was the go-to guy. Yeah, I was the guy that most wanted to see shot in the head. And Don Johnson, at the time, I was told this by an armory guy, one of the guys that, before he quit, the armory guys quit on the show. And it was just like everybody running around with fully automatic weapons with half loads in them that could kill you with no supervision whatsoever. And it was insane. I mean, Miami Vice, first of all, the idea of Miami Vice was insane. I mean, if you told people in the 60s that the hippest guys on TV were going to be narcs, you know, I mean, who would believe that? If Nostradamus lived in the 60s and said, you know, that was my Nostradamus accent. You notice that was very much like.
You know, he's been gone a long time. I'm pretty sure nobody's going to disagree with.
Yeah,
me.
Rich Little.
No, I hung out
Rich
with
Rich Little.
He could have been around with Nostradamus.
Yeah, Rich Little still does Nostradamus, and Danny Gans has a whole hunk in his act of Nostradamus singing "Mammy" because
Nostradamus such good. And Kermit the Frog singing "Mammy" as a duet.
And then he throws in something racist and homophobic. Someone just, speaking of which, wrote us a letter from Canada asking us questions about Vegas. And the one they most wanted answered was, is Danny Gans still a pansy? I think they mean pansy in terms of wimp. I don't think they mean it with a homophobic
flower
thing. Yeah, not the flower either. We're on Free FM, in case you haven't guessed. 866-313-FREE, 3733. It's a Good Friday, and I'll take, I might take some calls, but, you know, I'm trying to get through. We get hundreds and hundreds of Gmails every day. They seem to be really polite and witty and well-written, and we don't get to them very often. So today, I want to get to a lot. I'd also want to talk about David Blaine. I've got hours to tell you people about David Blaine. But before I get to David Blaine, I want to get to some of these Gmails because they're so wonderful. What do these people have in common? I'm not going to say what they have in common. We asked about it yesterday. Florence Joyner. Flo Jo.
Sorry, after we rehearsed it and everything.
I said I'll say Florence Joyner and you say Flo Jo.
Yeah.
Let's try that again. Florence Joyner.
You mean Flo Jo?
Yeah, Flo Jo.
The runner?
Claude Shannon, the theoretical mathematician. Yep. Richard Feynman.
Right.
Stephen Hawking. Now these start to give you a hint. W.C. Fields, Steve Martin, Tom Hanks, William Golden.
William Golden.
Golden, yep.
Lord of the
Jugglers.
Flies.
All of them jugglers. We asked and we received. We asked for people who were jugglers, and we got it. Now, we also got another Gmail that said I should challenge Jason Garfield to win a Nobel. Does it have the whole thing here?
I have the whole thing.
Yeah, the whole thing written here. Hi, guys. Love the show. It's the only talk radio show I listen to. Penn, you asked for a juggler who won a Nobel Prize, and here is a picture of Dr. Richard Feynman, winner of the 1965 Nobel Prize for Physics, juggling three balls on the beach. Now I think you should dare Jason Garfield, the Nobel Prize in Physics, juggling five balls to diss Feynman. Take him down a peg. Feynman was a juggler. Great idea. And William Golding, who would have thought that? So we have on this list, we asked for Nobel Prize winners who juggled. We got three Nobel Prize winners. Claude Shannon, of course, you would not have... He was information theory mostly, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Binary stuff?
Binary code.
So to him, everything was black and white.
He's a yes or no kind of guy.
He's a yes or no kind of guy. Binary Claude Shannon, juggler. He made a lot of juggling machines that would juggle. And so you thought you were wasting time. And William Golding, who wrote Lord of the Flies, 1983 Nobel for Literature, he's a juggler. He's a juggler. As a matter of fact, we saw a little speech where he wanted to do juggling. And the one that might surprise you the most is Stephen Hawking, who I call Screaming Steve Hawking. Screaming Steve Hawking used to be a juggler before he got his Lou Gehrig's disease.
I think that's it.
What's the proper name of that disease?
I don't know.
Yeah, look it up.
Okay.
We should know that disease, shouldn't we? Yeah. Oh, you're going to put the abbreviation. Yeah, ALS. But what does that stand for? Smarty Pants Communist.
ALS.
ALS, yeah. But Stephen Hawking was a... You know, I respect Stephen Hawking for a lot of things. But two things I respect him most for was he divorced his wife because he was having an affair with his nurse and he could only move one finger. That's something to love, Stephen Hawking. And he was also on Larry King. And anybody that's on Larry King, I dropped my pants on Larry King. Larry King asked me something. I forgot what it was. And I jumped up on his desk and I dropped my pants. And that was the last time I was on Larry King. But when Stephen Hawking was on Larry King, they asked him, being the smartest man in the world, that's, you know, the kind of thing that... That Larry King would say, you know, being the intellect you are and having all these deep thoughts, what do you think about in your spare time? What do you think about most of the time? And he answered women. And Stephen Hawking for being one of the real human heroes. Of course, your top scientists, you know, Richard Feynman, who I knew, just great guys. You know, I think being smart is a really good thing. You know, if you have a choice and you can have a chance to be smart, go for it. Because the people who are really smart seem to be really, really good people. So Stephen Hawking was a juggler. So they say. This is just people writing it. The other thing I asked, I want to read this just because it's just a good joke. this is from Crisley. Crisley, I guess? Yeah. Crisley is a guy who writes to us now and again. And he says, when I pictured my reaction to the idea of seeing Sean Penn in a boat coming to help me in New Orleans, my first and only thought was, despite the urge to obtain proof of this, I better make sure to hide my camera so I don't get hit. I asked a lot of questions about how Sean Penn gets it together to go and go to a disaster area and help, and you know why the rest of us. He also had a camera crew with him, right?
Yeah. Following him in another boat.
But yeah, we didn't see footage from it, did we? I mean, is he saving it up for something? Is he like doing?
I think there was some footage of it on the news.
So you go to a disaster area with your own film crew, and then do good acts while they. I guess it doesn't matter, you know. If you're drowning, and the guy who saves you is a showboater, it doesn't make a goddamn bit of difference. He's a showboater.
Probably
does it?
Not to you.
Not to me at all. No, I don't think at all. You know, God says I.
I'm glad you have an arm and a camera. Fine.
I think showboating is a absolutely fine thing. I asked in kind of a performance art moment on the show. You know, some of the show we like to have funny. Some of the show we like to have controversial. But some of the show we're just doing very odd performance art. I read an article about 300-million-year-old fossilized worm feces. And I read it because I wanted to say that anything could offend people. Some things that I've said have offended people in the past. You know, we do bulls hit, and we do a few other things, and I have strong opinions on things. I believe from experience I can say right now that most of my opinions are wrong, and I'll learn about that later. But for right now, I believe them passionately, and I read about them and so on. And trying to learn, and I believe the best way in a marketplace of ideas for people to learn is to say these crazy things that come into your head, state them very strongly, have people argue with you, but some people disagree and want you to shut up. And my point was, no matter what you say in public, you will hurt someone's feelings. So I wrote this little article about worm feces and then asked for people to write me letters, hate letters. This is one of my favorites. This is from John in Texas. Who writes about the worm feces. You idiot! Worm feces are dirt! Dirt! You are talking about dirt on the radio! How dare you! You are a fat, atheistic, God-hating bastard! No worm feces could possibly be older than 6,000 years old! Don't you realize how you could hurt someone's feelings that may like working with dirt, and now you tell them they've been playing in worm poop? It's outrageous! I have a good mind to report you to the FCC and have them give you a good stiff fine for talking about this filth over the public airways. I feel much better now. That's from John.
Good stiff fine.
Good stiff fine.
You think he was still talking about worms and dirt?
I was feces on as a child by a worm. I am angry and disturbed by your mentioning of worm feces on your program. God damn you to hell, Penn Jillette. That's from Chris. You know, this is really fun because it puts, you know, we very rarely, I'm going to tell you, we get hundreds of Gmails a day. And the negative ones, the angry ones, are really a small number, single digits, right?
Yeah, it's three per thousand.
And most of those three per thousand are still polite. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
that would not be the case, no. They are after I write back. I usually write back.
So. Yeah. Here's another one from Pete, an avid listener, he says. How dare you? For years, I had a friend who was closer to me than anyone in the world. He is quiet and does not eat much or take up much room. In fact, I barely see him. But once in a while, he comes out to play a little, and then I put him back. These times have been filled with joy for me. Until today, you are so insensitive. I now feel dirty, and I'm wondering if there is something wrong with having a tapeworm as a best friend. I hope you are satisfied, an avid listener. This is
he seems angry from
Bobo. Yeah. Tell Penn I specialize in juggling fossilized worm feces and ants, and I'm angry that I can't juggle antelopes. I thought we lived in a free society. So those are just a few, the sampling of the letters.
People are
people.
Outraged.
Outrage. You can be outraged about anything, and you should be outraged. And that's another thing I want to say. 866-313-FREE-3733. I try really hard, you know, although I will show tremendous disrespect for ideas, I try very hard not to show disrespect for people. But in the second segment, I'll be talking about David Blaine. But other than that, so if you want to call up 866-313-FREE-3733 and disagree with with me on anything, I welcome that. I'm fine with that. That's the way I learn. Penradio@gmail.com. Penradio.com, which is interesting that I just said that's the way I learn. Many people, you know, read books and study, but my way of learning is to get a talk show, say things that could be wrong, and then wait for people to correct me. The whole CBS Free FM network, as far as I'm concerned, exists to correct factual errors that I have. I was reading the paper yesterday. They have a condo on the Atlanta Speedway. You can now buy a condo that looks out over a speedway. So you hear really loud NASCAR racing, and you have this big window that you can look down and watch. It's like buying a condo on a golf course. And I do not care at all about NASCAR. I know it's the most popular sport in the United States of America, and I love the United States of America. And I thought, well, you know, maybe I should watch a little. So I watched.
By association.
I also met Jeff. I'm not going to forget his name. Jeff.
Gordon.
Gordon, thank you. I played poker with Jeff Gordon. That was so important to me. All I was thinking about was Phil Gordon, who's the poker player. I was playing with Jeff Gordon, who's a little man, a homunculus, you know, to fit in there. He's
homunculus?
About, he's homunculus, yeah. Okay. He's about, I don't know, I'd look it up on the web. He's about 4'10". Jeff Gordon. And he's used to being in cars going very, very fast. And I played poker against him. He played very badly, and he beat me. Two important facts to keep in mind. And I hung out with Jeff Gordon, and he only turns left, which I guess this is all obvious stuff to NASCAR people. So I tried watching a little bit of it, and I didn't really understand it or get it. But I didn't look at it enough. You know, you can't watch something for 15 minutes. Even watching South Park, you know, the best show on TV, you watch it for 15 minutes, you don't get it. So you can't be expected to get NASCAR right away. But I was thinking about my friend Jesse Marion, who directs our show a lot. She just won. Congratulations, Jesse Marion. She just won... director's award she won in the L.A. L.A. Times or L.A. Weekly, one of those. One of those big awards she won for directing, well, a play that I wrote with Stephen Banks. But I lost.
So congratulations to her.
Congratulations to her. Exactly. She won the director thing.
Right.
Stephen Banks, who's SpongeBob guy, and I, who wrote the play together, we were up for an award.
Right.
We did not win. Jesse Marion won.
For directing. Your lousy words.
Directing my lousy words.
She almost saved this show. That's why they gave her the award.
It was handicapped. See, the other directors had done a better job, but they directed better works. So it was actually, she was heavily handicapped. She did better with what she was handed. But there was a play called Love Tapes.
Mm-hmm.
That I wrote with Stephen Banks and that played in L.A. last year. And it was up for Best Actor, Best Actress, Best Director, and Best Writing. And only the director won because it's all political. I think Queer Eye actually beat me on the writing.
Everything.
And Jesse Marion, who is just terrific. She's one of the greatest people on earth. Jesse Marion said a really smart thing about being an adult. She said, being adult is having candy for breakfast. When you are an adult, you can have candy for breakfast. And that's exactly the way I felt about these condos on the Atlanta Speedway. It is so great to be grown up, powerful, and have your own life so you can do something as stupid as buying a condo that overlooks a NASCAR Speedway. You know.
I like that.
Is that what it stands for? what has he got there? He's holding up something. No, you don't want to say that. He's got a.
He's trying to tell us what NASCAR stands for.
He's made up something that NASCAR stands for, and I don't think there's. He's got words in there that I don't want to use. I don't think that's called for. All I'm saying is, it's Happy Jack. We're not going to trash him too much. It's Happy Jack's birthday. He's 41 years old, which is stupid old.
Yeah.
That is way old. Think back to when you were 14. And think about what you thought about a 41-year-old guy. And think about that when you call your 14-year-old friends. This is Penn Jillette. We're on Free FM. Talk about anything. 866-313-FREE-3733. PennRadio@gmail.com. I think the next section or the section after, I'll be talking about David Blaine. So if you got anything to say about David Blaine, queue up on the phones. Can't move your your fingers that fast on the keys, even if it doesn't matter what note you're playing. That's Mike Jones, the astonishing Mike Jones, playing the piano with the Penn Jillette theme. If you want to get some more Mike Jones stuff, PennRadio.com has all the links. It'll take you to Jones Jazz. Goodell was telling me during the break, because we do talk to each other, that people are also buying condos on runways.
Yeah, you can get a house on a runway.
You should be. We should have a whole department on our show that's called Candy for Breakfast. It just has the stuff that that adults do that really says, you know, I tried to remember when I was 12 years old, you know, I would sit around with my friends and say, if I had a lot of money, you know what I'd do? And I can't remember any of it. I mean, if it was like a truck of Snickers bars or something, I could afford that now. I can't remember it. So if you happen to be 12 years old, you listen to this show and you think about, boy, if I had $1 million, you know what I'd do? Write it down or put it in a file or something or leave it some or email it to yourself with a delay that it gets to you in 30 years. So if you have that money, you can pay off the debt to the 12-year-old boy, because I think you owe that. I mean, when I was 12 years old, I really disliked Kreskin, because Kreskin treated me very badly when I was a kid. And I have spent the rest of my life disliking Kreskin for that reason. There's other promises I made to myself when I was 12 that I've tried to keep, but I can't remember the money ones. But I guess, you know, where I live in a place that looks like a prison. I have a fire pole, you know. I have a sex dungeon. What more do you need to make a 12-year-old boy happy? Now, don't put that sentence together. Don't take it out of context. What I mean is I have a house that a 12-year-old boy would be happy with. Not that a 12-year-old boy will ever be over here. Until my son will be born in a month, and then 12 years from then he'll be a 12-year-old boy, and I sure hope he likes living in his dad's house. Happy birthday to Happy Jack, and let's go to the phones.
Let's take line 8. How about we talk to Joe?
We haven't talked on the phone for a while. How you doing, Joe? What's up, Joe? This is the major reason we don't talk on the phone.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Is that the phone doesn't work. What happens is we have two Dixie cups with a string going to New York, and sometimes Happy Jack doesn't keep it taut. So, Happy Jack, it's your birthday. Keep it taut. Keep it taut. Don't let our string go flaccid on the free FM. Is Joe really not there?
As near as I can tell, Joe is really not there.
I hear something way in the background.
Wait. He's on line 5. Well, why don't we switch to line 5 then?
Hey, how you
Where
doing?
Are you?
Are you here now?
I'm here now.
Good. That's probably really frustrating for you, isn't it? Because you can hear us talking and we can't hear anything.
Yeah, I can hear you talking about me.
What's up, boss?
Hey, I got a little clarification. You talked about Claude Shannon. I am a former Bell Laboratories engineer, and as one who studied his theory very extensively, his theory does not apply to just the digital binary case, but it applies to the general case. It just happens that binary communications was coming into its own right after he invented the theory in 1948.
That was information theory, right?
Right. That was the theory of mathematical theory of communication and information.
Right.
You might also be interested to note that as a juggler, he calculated that the maximum number of items that a two-armed being could juggle, I think, was between 9 and 11.
Really? Because people are doing that, you know.
Yeah. Well, that was his entire focus in his research was the limits of things. But he also solved that for the general case. It wasn't just for a two-armed juggler, but for any number of arms, he would come up with a number that would be the maximum of things it could juggle.
Now, did he juggle himself?
Yes, he did.
I mean, so to speak. and did you know him?
I did not know him personally, but I knew people who worked with him. One of my guys was a lab technician for him, who said that he slobbered quite a bit, which was kind of interesting.
Well, you know, I don't know if you know. You must know Rob Pike, right?
Name sounds familiar.
Yeah, Rob Pike is one of the Bell Labs guys. He's now over at Google. But he also knew Claude Shannon. It was very sad. What he died about, what, 2-3 years ago? A couple years ago?
Yeah, a couple of years ago.
Can you find a person more important in information and communication than Claude Shannon? Probably number one, right?
He's definitely number one. Number two is probably a guy whose name is escaping me right now because I'm too old to remember.
Okay, but I want to reiterate, Claude Shannon, juggler. Claude Shannon, juggler. That's the positive we want for him.
And unicyclist, by the way.
And unicyclist.
All right.
Well, both Goodell and I also ride unicycles.
Oh, right. Really?
So thanks a lot, Joe. Thanks so much, man.
You're very
Wow.
you know, we got to talk to Joe because he's an engineer at Bell Labs. That's the quality of person we need to be able to get through these goddamn phone systems. That's what it takes. I've got an idea. Why don't you hit the line that has someone on it? That was a good call. That made me happy. I love it when smart people call. I just really love it when smart people call. You know, because apparently getting through on our phone lines is rocket science. It is. You know, Crasher Lewis, who runs the Penn & Teller office. I know this is said by other people, but once in a screaming match with some Hollywood producers who had done a bad job on something we were doing, he actually said, "This is not rocket surgery. Brain science." It really weakens your point. Do you have another call you want to take?
No.
You don't want to take any more calls?
I think you ought to tell us about David Blaine.
Okay, I will.
Blaine thing up your kind of butt.
Yeah, I kind of do. Kind of butt. This is from the Associated Press. It's New York. I had to dig deep for this. It was way, way down in the entertainment stuff. First of all, David Blaine's a great guy, and I like him.
Start with that.
When someone says that, when someone starts with, you know, "I like Penn Jillette," and then starts talking, you are so dead. David Blaine is going to do last year. He's going to do, David Blaine intends to sleep with the fishes, but only for a week and in full public view. The 33-year-old magician will perform his latest stunt by living underwater for 7 days and nights in a human aquarium. Human aquarium is the quote he uses, also called swimming pool. Human aquarium in front of New York's Lincoln Center. It's a human aquarium, people. It's a goddamn swimming pool. He will conclude by attempting to hold his breath underwater longer than the record, 8 minutes, 58 seconds. Teller, in our show, we do the water tank, holds his breath for 11 minutes, just so you know. But David Blaine, we do it in a water tank. We don't do it in a human aquarium.
I don't think we can afford a human aquarium.
No, we use a tank.
In a cardboard box.
The finale of his latest stunt will air in a 2-hour special on TV. Blaine's previous feats of endurance.
How long is he going to be in there?
He's going to be in there 7 days.
And it's part of a 2-hour special.
Yeah. Well, they're going to edit it down because it's. Now, we did on NBC, we did an entire underwater special.
Yeah.
And we did tricks. We did tricks.
Yes.
You were there.
I spent a week underwater.
Yeah. 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yeah. We did.
1 week straight.
We got out for an hour
while we flew somewhere else. And then got back in the water.
We did tricks underwater.
Yes.
See, David Blaine is a magician, and yet when he does stuff, he doesn't do anything. The first thing he did was he laid in a box, right, for like 7 days, 12 days. It doesn't matter how many days. He laid in a box doing nothing. I'll tell you, if doing nothing makes you a star, every single kid in my high school should be a superstar. They did jack for their, you know, for 5, 10, 15 years of their lives. They did a week doing nothing was nothing to them. Previous feats of endurance. I don't know what the endurance is of being underwater. He's getting food. He's going to be fed a special liquid diet through tubes.
Why?
You've been around scuba divers. They eat apples.
You can
eat anything you want underwater.
You can catch fish and eat them.
Yeah. Scuba divers know this stuff. I mean, there are guys in the Caribbean that do this stuff all the time. I mean, what is this? The headline should be, David Blaine possibly gets pruny in front of people. Woohoo! David Blaine. David Blaine's previous, and he also announced other feats before this, right? I mean, he hasn't done a TV special for 25 years, right? And he's announced other stuff. I'm going to drop out of an airplane, and I'm going to do the highest drop ever done. I'm going to win the international chess competition. He makes all these announcements, then doesn't do them. But what he has done so far is balancing on a small platform for 35 hours, which is flagpole sitting, which was done in the 20s. And he said, I saw him on TV talking about how he was like a saint in doing this. Except, of course, David, that the saints didn't have model girlfriends they went home to after 30. 35 hours, surviving inside a massive block of ice for 61 hours. For those of you who have had one little bit of physics, what are igloos made out of?
Yeah.
Ice, you retard! He was living in an Eskimo house.
Yeah.
It was an Inuit house he lived in. Oh, I'm going to live in a, guess what? I'm going to live in a teepee and call, he will live in canvas for 60, he will live inside an elk hide for, And then he did, of course, the stupidest thing, where he fasted for 44 days in suspended acrylic box over the Thames River in London. 44 days he went without food, and then when I saw him last, he was fat, which is really funny. Now, I don't mean like he was enormous, but he was like my level of fat. He really was, you know. And at 33, I was never my level of fat. So he goes 44 days without eating and then spends like, what, a year with Haagen-Dazs? You know, and that's the thing. The people that really have the world's record for going without food are dead. Okay? They're dead. That's what you do when you start. He goes to the country that had Bobby Sands in it doing a hunger strikes, and he goes, and he is starving himself for kicks. There are people in Ethiopia just going, that David Blaine is great. He's going 44 days without food. What's it been for us, honey? Oh, that's right. 100 days ago, we ate a dung beetle. Nothing's funny. Nothing's funnier than hunger. He's going to get all pruny. You know, when he did that, passersby will be able to touch the aquarium.
Wow.
They'll be able to touch the swimming pool, take pictures with Blaine, and communicate with him. They can communicate with him. Hi, Dave.
Through hand signals, probably, mostly.
Yeah.
And he's underwater.
And there's going to be, for those of you who can guess, there's going to be one major hand signal given to David Blaine over and over again for being in a swimming pool for 7 days. He's a genius. He's a genius. I got more to say about this. We'll be back after this. This is Penn Jillette, 866-313-FREE, 3733. And I like David Blaine. He's a friend of mine. Imagine if I don't like him. Yeah, this is Penn Jillette talking on Free FM 866-313-FREE. That's 3733. I got more to say about David Blaine. But what did you have? You had a correction there.
We do. NASCAR is not the biggest sport in America. That distinction belongs to the NFL. NASCAR is the fastest growing sport in America. Thank you, John.
Penn Jillette, wrong about everything on Free FM. Can't even get through one goddamn sentence.
The simplest of facts.
Simplest of facts we have wrong on here. We're all learning together, people. Here's someone that wrote to me, I think this is important, eating candy for breakfast. Everything I say is controversial. What could be safer than that? No, Sir Gillette. I cannot accept that eating candy for breakfast is being an adult. Being an adult is eating what you choose for breakfast, whatever that is, sure. Sheer power is not being an adult. If it were a 13-year-old, mentally retarded muscle builder could take candy for breakfast, whether her parents wanted them to or not. Boy, a little problem with the pronouns here. Autonomy, freedom with responsibility is the key. Any tyrant can throw off the chains of law, but only an adult is responsible. That's Jesse, who signed your fan. Absolutely right. Some Ayn Rand stuff sneaks in there, you know. Of course there's responsibility. I think, and I'm now speaking for Jesse Marion, what Jesse meant was, if you're a child, you may want candy for breakfast every morning, and you have to be stopped from that. A responsible adult can say, hey, honey, what do you say we have a couple of Snickers for breakfast? I think that's what she meant, and that's what I meant. But I did not say it clearly.
The difference between adult and just grown up. When you grow up, you can have candy for breakfast every day.
We had a David Blaine call, didn't we?
We did. Line 8.
Sure, let's take it.
I believe it's line 8. May. We're talking to May on line 8.
Hey, May.
Hey, Penn.
How are you doing?
Pretty good. I actually have David Blaine.
Yeah?
I work here in a magic shop here in Vegas, and we're always getting kids and sometimes even adults coming in. Do you have this trick that David Blaine did on his show? And so we pull him out, like we'll show him the folding quarter or the rising card. And I just feel so terrible because these kids get heartbroken that it's just a rubber band or a piece of tape that makes these tricks work.
Shh, don't say that.
Well, thanks, May.
I want to trick that was that makes him work.
I want to address that. Thank you, man. I want to address that. Thanks for bringing that up. I want to address that because, you know, when David Blaine did his first special, Street Magic, which I think still is the best television magic special ever done, and Penn and Teller have done three, and I think that David Blaine is better than all of those. His first special, Street Magic, which was Bill Kalush worked on it, who is one of the people that I respect most in magic. Bill Kalush, Michael, a lot of guys worked on it.
Michaels, a lot of Michaels.
A lot of Michaels.
That was a safe bet. I bet some Steves worked on it, too.
but what he did, and I remember seeing that special, and as May said from the magic shop here, what he was doing, and this is the thing that's so remarkable, what he was doing was stuff that we bought at magic shops when we were 12 years old. You know, cigarette through the quarter, rising card, all that stuff you can buy anywhere. The levitation trick is something everybody was doing all the time as a gag at parties. But David Blaine had the sense to realize that it wasn't the trick that mattered on TV. It was the people's reaction that mattered. And he went to the streets. People had done that before. People had done street magic before. But he turned the cameras around. So you saw David Blaine doing stuff, but you also saw the reactions of the people. And what matters on TV is the beauty of people being blown away by the magic. It's not so much the magic. So we had this weird feeling like we had missed the most obvious thing. You know, it's like when you hear Louie Louie, you know, it's just three chords, or you hear any of these simple songs, La Bamba, Twist and Shout, oh, those are the same. But there's all those songs that really make people rock out. Yes, you can be a music snob and say these are really easy to play, they don't mean anything, but the point is they bring people joy, and that's what David Blaine latched onto, and beautifully. And his stunts, you know, a lot of our crew were part of the burying him underground. And the wacky thing about David Blaine is that magic is lying. That's what magic is. When you say you're a magician, you say that you lie. Teller holds his breath for over 11 minutes on stage in the Penn and Teller show. Penn and Teller shoot automatic 357 magnums into each other's faces and catch the bullets in our teeth. That happens on stage. That Teller pulls goldfish out of nowhere. That happens on stage. That's a lie. Okay? All of that's a lie, and it's a lie when you say the Penn and Teller magic show. It's a lie from beginning to end, but there's nothing in your senses that will contradict that. It's beautiful. So David Blaine does these stunts, and then he gets mad if people think he's cheating. Like our crew went in and said, you're going to be doing this buried underground thing. When do you want to sneak out? When do you want to do this stuff? And all you're really doing when you spend 7 days underground is living in your own stink. I mean, the funk, they had to keep reporters away when they brought him out of the ground because the funk was so devastating. You can't get near a person who stayed in a box for 7 days. And he had this glass top on him. This is the coolest thing about the David Blaine thing. Coolest thing is clubbers, you know, club women, after they're being out to the clubs, would go by. He was buried 24 hours a day, of course. They would come out in skirts and stand over the box for him as a little show to keep him occupied. And I mean, when you've got that going, who wouldn't be in a box for 7 days? And then, you know, on the starving to death thing, he was probably snuck food. And I believe completely that he wasn't snuck food until he took me aside, put his arm around me and said, you know, Penn, I really didn't have anything to eat that whole time. And he looked me right in the eye. And before that, it was kind of, he thinks he doth protest too much. Because what would you do if you wanted people to believe that? You would take Penn and Teller aside separately, put your arm around them, and say, no, no, I really didn't. So I don't know. If he wasn't slip food, he's an idiot. You know, that's the thing. You know, Teller, who I consider to be the best magical mind alive, you know. I think there are other people that are up there, but there's Teller way up there, Bill Kalush is way up there, and Eric Mead. There's a bunch of really good thinkers in magic. Teller's the greatest, and Teller, you know, would do any of these stunts, but he would cheat at them. He's underwater for huge amounts of time. We did a special in the Caribbean. Teller was underwater for all of it, you know. Teller did magic tricks underwater. Teller holds his breath for 11 and a half minutes. Yes, Teller cheats because we're magicians. That's what you do is you cheat. And he goes in the ice. And, of course, the temperature inside the ice is whatever the heat is. You can keep ice going. The hardest part of that stunt was getting the ice to stay frozen when you have all that heat on the inside. The hardest part of the stunt for David Blaine was standing up. Standing up for that amount of time is really, really hard. But a friend of mine, Todd Robbins, who we had on the show, said that he thought that David Blaine announced stunts that he never actually did, like jumping out of the airplane for the longest free fall and winning at chess and all that other stuff, because he hoped that people would only kind of half remember it and think that he had done it. So David Blaine, you know, and Chris Angel, and I guess, you know, David Blaine, everybody in Magic gets along fairly okay. You know, even me, who's insulted a lot of people, I can hang out with David Blaine. I can hang out with Chris Angel. I know Lance Burton. I can hang out with Lance Burton. There's a couple guys in Magic that keep to themselves that we don't talk about that much. But for the most part, we're all kind of in this together. And I'm sure David Blaine's special. It also says he trained with Navy SEALs. I mean, sometimes the jive is just too much. I mean,
I think they're black. Aren't SEALs black?
Yeah.
They're not Navy.
You don't have to train with Navy SEALs to be in a swimming pool with food and water and sustenance, and it's heated to
it's gonna great be, press. That's heated, what I would say.
Well, the thing, you know what's great about the press is, the greatest thing about the press is it goes 24 hours a day. So whenever you have a news crew that has a slow moment, they can do it. All the stuff we've tried to do for press has been time
sensitive.
Time sensitive, yeah. You had to be there for that 5 minutes, that half hour, whatever. So, I mean, David Blaine has done some really, really smart stuff. Yeah, I mean, there's also, I mean, I don't know what they're doing. I guess the tank could get kind of funky. If you don't clean a goldfish tank for that amount of time, it's a little funky. Weber, Michael Weber, Bill Kalush, David
Weber.
Blaine.
Sure.
That was the three of, I don't know if they're working on the new special, but Michael Weber, in terms of, he's a lawyer, but also a stunning magician and one of the great magic minds. Bill Kalush knows everything. He's also not a magician he trades in commodities or something, but he's a brilliant man. And I had one of the greatest conversations of my life. It was about 3 hours with Teller, Bill Kalush, Michael Weber, and David Blaine. And the five of us were all sitting around talking about magic theory. And David Blaine's theory includes that you should let people believe what they want to believe. In other words, if you're going to be in a box, you don't say it's a magic trick. You say, I'm doing this endurance thing. And then if you get slipped food or you don't get slipped food, it doesn't matter. It's this event that happens in people's imagination. And my point of view is that you tell people the truth. And the truth is we're lying. So if you come to the Penn & Teller show, you're going to see clearly audience members load 357 magnums with signed bullets and fire them into our faces where we'll catch them in our teeth. You're going to see that. It's a lie. It's a 100% lie. And that's the beauty of it, because guns are really dangerous. People really do get hurt. And yet we do this thing that is a screw you to death. It's a celebration of death. Just getting really hungry in a box. I said celebration of death. It's a celebration of life, a celebration of health. Being in a box starving seems to me to be a celebration of death. And that's the difference. But all of this is theoretical difference with a couple artists that respect one another. Or I guess I shouldn't say that. I respect David Blaine. Whether he respects me or not is his business. that's most of it. Did we have anything else you want? I have this great monkey story. This guy wrote me after I told the monkey and the dwarf story. He told this great story about his brother being attacked by a monkey, which is really nothing
funnier. A troop of monkeys. A whole troop of monkeys. Monkeys.
I want to read the whole. It's like a. I haven't got time right now. It's a 2-page single spaced Gmail that I'm going to read on the air, because the monkey story is so great, and because monkeys are so great. This is Penn Jillette. We're going to be back on Monday, of course. Have a beautiful weekend. Have a beautiful Easter Sunday. Have a beautiful Passover. Celebrate it whatever way you want this time. And we'll be back on Free FM on Monday to talk about whatever is in your craw or whatever seems beautiful to you. I have so many things on the list. You know, Cheetah, the monkey, is like 73
years old. He's painting.
He's
got a new career.
He's like Schwarzenegger.
He does it all.
He does it all. Okay, this is Penn Jillette. I'm talking to Michael Godeau. And, you know, the more I think about you guys, the more you come to the show and I get to put a face on the airwaves, the more I seem to really like you. Be nice to each other. Bye-bye.
Check out Penn Jillette weekdays from 2 to 3 on Free FM.